Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow wherever you are. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
The Get Rich Slow Club podcast is a collaboration between Tash Etchman from Tash Invest and Anna Christina from Perla. The Get Rich Slow Club acknowledges the traditional custodians of the land we record on. From coast to coast, across land, waters, and communities, we pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging. Any advice is general and does not consider your financial situation, needs, or objectives, so consider whether it's appropriate for you.
Welcome to the Get Rich Slow Club podcast,
where we take you from beginner to confident investor,
where we can teach you everything you need to know about investing.
So come get rich slow with us.
Anna and I were chatting this morning about how her career has come full circle, and I thought it would be great to share on the podcast about how she went from studying fine arts with a minor in communication and publishing to then working as a product manager in tech, becoming a two-time author and a finance podcast host. It's quite the jump. But first, our money moments. Do you have one, Anna?
I do. I had a friend's wedding just recently, and I was rushing because it was a weekend away from the kids. It's just like, it was a lot of things happening. And we had some time before the wedding, and I was like, I really want to get a pedicure because I never do them, and it would just be really nice. And one of my friends who was also at the wedding, he's like, I'll come with you. Like, let's go do it. And I was having a very emotional day that day. There was a lot of things, personal things that were happening and being at the wedding and all. So my friend said, yeah, let me just check my bank account and let's do it. Okay, cool. So we went and we got our nails done. And then when we were done, I just really wanted to pay for both of us because it was so nice to hang out, have a conversation before the big night and just connect. Like, we really connected on an emotional level. You know, when you have like deep, deep conversations, and I was like, let me do this for you. So my money moment was, I don't get to do this enough, but like treat other people. And I felt really great afterwards.
That's awesome. Like double wins there. I find like getting pedicures and massages is like the perfect time to talk to people. Like I've had so many great conversations in Bali over a $10 foot massage.
Yeah. It's because you can't go anywhere and you put your phones away and you're not distracted. And it was just, I don't know, we had like some just deep chats and I was just really happy. Just happy. What about you? What's so your good money moment?
I've been looking at free events around and one popped up of an author that I've been following, Bree Lee. She wrote Eggshell Skull and she just released a new book called The Work, but she was hosting a free book launch party. So I went to that and it was heaps of fun and like 100 people went, which was awesome. And I think we spent I spent $25 maybe on the night because I bought Bao Buns for dinner, which was great, and a Coke Zero as well. But it was just like such a great, mostly cheap night out. It was awesome.
And it probably just like stayed in your mind afterwards as well.
Yeah, because I loved her first few books and I was in the middle of reading this new one, but it was like the conversation was great. Like it was all really cool ideas. It was really fun.
Awesome. I love moments like that. Both of our
money moments are like nice moments.
Wholesome, yes.
Wholesome moments.
So back into your career journey, how did you decide on your degree? What made you actually want to study finance, communication, and publishing? It's quite the mix.
Yeah. So it, I don't know. This journey is so funny because when I graduated from high school, I wanted to take a gap year, which is less common in Canada than it is here. And my parents were very much like, no, you have to go to school. and so I didn't want to really go to school. Like I really just wanted to travel and adventure. And so I applied. At the time, I was really into art in high school. And I got into a couple schools for art. And one school I got in for business. But because I waited last minute and applied last minute, I didn't have as many universities to choose from, which was fine because I kind of did that to myself. But I did get into the art program that I wanted to. And therefore, I was like, okay, I'm going to study this because I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I was a little bit of a free spirit, still am. And then I ended up in art school. And it was actually like studio art and contemporary art and conceptual art. So I did a lot of painting, photography, installations, and was very much involved with my student union as well.
That's amazing. My experience picking what I did at uni was very different. My dad is like a metallurgist engineer and he made me a decision matrix on Excel and we put values against everything. And that's how I picked my degree.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Very different. Like, I don't think my parents were impressed that I was going to go to art school. They really wanted me to go to business school because I got in as well. And I was like, nah, if you're not happy with my decisions to go and like adventure, then I'm going to study what I want to study. But surprisingly, that took me on a completely different trajectory because I was involved in the student union and I was actually the treasurer of my art student union. I then got asked if I wanted to run for the student society of the university. And I did. And I ended up being the treasurer of the student society, which kind of pushed my degree back another year. So I didn't finish on time. I had to like extend my degree. But to be honest, it gave me such great experience in terms of working within a union, being an employer, like looking at the budgets of a whole student society. And so that was like my first kind of step into a real financial role. And again, it's like seems so weird. It's like this art student is the treasurer of the student society. But that's just kind of how things came into play in that space.
Were you interested in personal finance or money before that?
Yeah, I was. I think at the time I read, what is it, The Rich Barber or something, which is a Canadian book. I think that's what it's called. And I was interested in saving, but I've talked about this quite a bit. Like I didn't know about the investing side of things. And so that was something that I had to learn. And in Canada, we have something that's similar to a super, but your employer doesn't put it in. It's more like a 401k in the United States where you have to put your money in. And sometimes you have these plans that if you have an employer, your employer will match what you put in, but it needs to be self-initiated. So because I already was kind of interested in, I was already interested in savings. And in fact, I remember my dad saying, it's not how much you make, it's how much you save. And that's always kind of stayed in my head. So I would always put away like 10% of my paycheck. And my first job was actually McDonald's. And I remember being like, this is really hard for minimum wage. Mm-hmm. But it just kind of put those habits into place. So it wasn't that much harder to think about money in a different context, in a business context.
Yeah, that's such an awesome lesson from your dad. Did you get paid to be the treasurer? Or was that a volunteer thing?
Awesome. I got paid. Yeah. So it was a paid position. And which is why I was okay with delaying my career. Again, I think at the time my parents were very like not happy with that. They're like, you need to go to school. Like very Eastern European parents, very, you know, traditional. You go to school, you get a job, you buy a house, you get married, you have kids. I didn't do any of that in that order. And so because I delayed my career, they were not that happy with me. But at the same time, I was working at a restaurant. I learned the whole tipping system is very different in Canada. It's very American than here. And so I had to manage money as is by myself. And when I graduated from university, my first job was working for an art publishing company. So I was like, wow, awesome. I got a job in the art career, right? Like in
amazing,
the art space. Yeah, mm-hmm. This is the lottery. However, it was the most toxic job I ever had, like one of the most toxic jobs. So one of the things I thought was really interesting of this company was I got to liaise with artists. They got to create artworks. We would either scan it or photograph it, and then we would print it on products. And at the time, this is like 2007, right? Like things were very hard to do at that time. It's not as easy as now where it's like print on demand.
Yeah, I was going to say everyone seems to do that these days.
A lot has changed. So that wasn't the case. But I really got along with a lot of the artists and was doing great work until I found out from a friend of mine that I was like one of the least, like lowest paid people in that position. And it's because I was straight out of university. And it was a family run business and it felt very toxic. And it really tainted my feelings about work. Like I was like, how do I do this for 40 years? Like, I hate this. I mean, I love the work and the job. I just didn't like the people. So that was another way for me to be like, well, I want to save money and then travel. So a lot of my passion was traveling and I spent a lot of time and money focusing on that and traveling the world when I could. And in Canada, you only have like 2 weeks holidays. So you do as much as you can. And I actually went to Central America. I begged to have more than 2 weeks. This job said no. I came back from my trip to Central America. And 2 days later, myself and a quarter of the company got laid off because it was the GFC.
Oh, wow. Going back a little bit, how did you deal with finding out that you were the lowest paid employee? Did you tell anyone? Did you ask for a pay rise? Or was it just like, oh, well, this is how it is back then?
Yeah, great question. So this is my first experience with this stuff. Like my parents didn't know how to help me in this because they didn't come from a place where you could negotiate or you could ask. And I didn't even know at that time either, right? I did eventually get like have a review at that job and I asked for a raise and I got a small raise. And then but it wasn't a lot. So I went back asking for more. And I think that they found me confrontational at the time. And so that's what I chalked it up to, like being one of the people that got let go. But so many other people got let go at that time too. And it was just the GFC and a lot of people lost their jobs at that time. And that kind of impacted my career because it was really hard to find a job after that. And so many people were struggling and a lot of people who finished university like just couldn't find a job because everyone was letting people go. It was a really hard time. People were unemployed. Luckily, I think my next step was I applied for the university that I graduated at and they were hiring people. So I got a job there. And everyone was like, you're set. You're unionized. You're at a university.
Yeah.
Your education is free. So if you want to go back to university, you can. It was like the perfect job. And everyone's like, you should never leave this job. And I wish that someone told me at that time, like, that is the worst advice you should take when you're in your 20s. Like,
you can leave. It's fine. Yeah.
You can leave. You should jump around. But again, you come from, like, I came from this traditional upbringing where you didn't jump around. You had one or two careers, right? Like, that wasn't the case. And I stayed at that job for way too long. And because I was unionized, I hit the cap of the most that I could earn. And there was no more that I could earn at that certain point.
How long were you there for?
I was in two different positions there. And I think both positions were like 3 to 4 years, like a long
time. Oh, it's like 8 years in total.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah,
long time. But the thing was, I was doing other amazing things in my life. So even though I didn't love my job, I didn't hate my job.
What was your
job? And I was creating courses in one of them. And then in the other job was I got to work in the art space, like actually do events, do theater events, do dance things. So we had like a huge theater at the university that we had a lot of. Yeah. So I worked in the arts. I did a lot of events and I mean, I loved it, but also at the same time I was playing roller derby. So I was coaching on the side. So I was making some money there. That was my passion. So my job just was a means for me to do what I loved in my life, which was play roller derby, like just do sports, hang out with friends, travel, adventure, coach. So I didn't really, like, I wasn't really focused on my career.
I can see all the skills linking up still, going course creation, also running events.
Right? Like, it is funny when you think about, or when I think about my career, I think of it as like kind of like loops looping into each other, you know, like I went back and revisited things. So one of the things was like I said, I would save up money and I would travel and I went on this trip and I met this woman who was living out of a van traveling through India. I met her in Nepal. And she was telling me how she's been doing this for 2 years. And I'm like, oh man, you're living my life. Like, I want to do that. I want to travel and adventure and just do a bunch of crazy things. One of the missing pieces, I think, in my story is I was in a car accident that really changed how I saw things. So I was in a car accident that gave me a concussion, and that recovery took me like over a year. So I had really bad migraines, memory loss, like cloudedness. So this is why I'm like also very concerned about people who have concussions, because I've been there and done that. And it's the more times you hit your head, the worse the concussions are. And I wanted to go back to roller derby. And my friend said to me, he goes, listen, I've had 3 concussions and this last one took me a year and a half. Can you wait a year and a half? And that was the point where I was like, I need to make some changes in my life. My body is really important, but it's not worth doing it in a sports sense where I can physically hurt myself and not be able to make money. So I have to change the way I'm thinking about things. So I went on this trip, and that's when I met this woman. And I was like, that's what I want to do. I want to travel. Like, I've traveled a lot already, but I've never lived anywhere else. And I had some friends in Australia and they said, come out. And I was like, I'm going to go live in Australia for a bit. And I asked for a sabbatical from my job at the university, because you can. So they were holding my job for me. And I went to Australia for a bit, loved it, traveled, then went to Europe, went to Southeast Asia, did all this travel, came back to Australia and was like, I'm going to find a job because I need to stay here, or I want to stay here. I want to come on a working holiday visa and see if I can get a job. And I went to, there's this thing called Creative Mornings where a lot of creative people get together. And it was, so it's kind of like a talk, like a morning chat talk, which is really awesome. They have it all over the world. And at that time, someone was talking about hiring at this company. And I went over and I said, hey, and they're like, we're looking for an event person. And I went there and said, hi, I've been back in the country for a week. I've been working in events for ages, everything from like doing roller derby events to these art events to all this stuff. Let's chat. And when I went in for the interview and met like the main people, they were like, well, we're literally about to hire someone. Why should we hire you? And I'm like, I'm the most driven person. I wouldn't be here in a few days. Like, I wouldn't have just landed back here and been in this position if it wasn't worth it. So like, I'm willing to work.
I'm the person. Hire me.
I'm the person. Hire me. And they eventually did. And it was a funny negotiation thing too, because as they were walking out the door, they're like, great, your wage is going to be XYZ. I can't remember what the number was. And we're about to walk out the door. But because I did so much research ahead of time, because I didn't know what the Australian industry was like what do people in events do,
get paid,
or how much do they make? I was like, no, I'm expecting X amount. And he kind of looked at me, he's like, okay, and walked out the door. And I was like, amazing. Oh my gosh.
Oh, thank God. That
was, thank goodness I did that research. Thank goodness I was prepared. And in that role, I got to grow quite a bit. So over the next couple of years, I moved from events to comms to doing investor relations, because the company was going.
Company? It was a tech company, was it?
Yeah, it was a tech. So again, it was a company where artists uploaded their designs and we sold them on products. But at this time, this wasn't, 2007. This was much later, where it was much easier to do print on demand stuff. So it was great. It was combining my artist skills with tech that I was interested in as is, and then comms in it. And in my role, because I was also in comms, I ended up being involved in the IPO of that company. So that's initial public offering. I got to work with investor relations and investors that were investing in the company. And that gave me more of that financial side and backing of that.
How did you make the decision to actually leave Canada and come to Australia? Like, how did your parents take that? How did you tell everyone? Or did you just decide and it was completely fine?
Well, when I met this woman who was talking about that, I said to her, I'm like, in 1 year, year's time, I'm going to do it. And I'm just one of those people that just hold myself accountable to things. And not that, like, she was just some stranger, that I'm talking to. But because I said it to her and I'm like, in 1 year's time, I'm going to be on a plane. And sure enough, on my next birthday, that was 1 year's time. I was on the plane and I left Canada. And I told my friends, I'm like, oh, I'm just going to probably be gone for a year, but I'm not sure. I felt like I had an inkling of, once I go off, I'll probably find a new adventure, because so much of my life has been like that. Like, we're just mainly talking about my career, but so much of my life has been adventures. Like, when I was in university, a lot of it was, I was very much of an activist. I worked in the downtown East Side, which is a very impoverished area. I got to work at a halfway house, which, you're a lot of people that are being reintroduced into the community. So I've always had this like activist-y roots to where I was going. And when I had passions or things that I believed about, I would just kind of follow that passion and it would take me to a new role or a new job. Because there's other things along the way. Like I also got to work at a halfway, like I was working at a halfway house part-time as well.
What were you doing at a halfway house? What was your role there?
Yeah, my role there was kind of like working the desk. So we would have people who were in jail, who were coming out and trying to be reintroduced into the community, but they had to come in at a certain time back in. So we were kind of like a caseworker with them, where you would meet with them and sign them in and out, make sure that they're taking their meds or not. And a lot has changed if you've been out of society for a while. So even just learning social skills is always a challenging thing.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
So yeah, it's like the people skills is such a great way. It's given me a lot of understanding of different socioeconomic situations in the world and backgrounds and advantages. And I recognize like I come from a place of privilege as well. It's just a lot of it is the hand that we were dealt.
Yeah, I feel like I got a similar experience from working in group homes as well with people with disabilities. And often it was people with like mental health conditions as well. And it was people I never would have ever spoken to if I hadn't have worked in those roles. And it really did like open my eyes to different people and their upbringings. So I think it's really good, like having a role like that when you're growing up. So going back to your tech company, they IPO'd, then what happened?
Yeah, then I realized that like as much as I love the comm side and some of the investor relations side, where I thought this is where I like really took my career seriously. Because up until now, like work was just a means of fulfilling my lifestyle, if that makes sense.
Like travel.
Yeah, a way to travel. Yeah, yeah, exactly. And at this point I was like, oh man, I don't have a lot of worries in the world. Like I have no dependents. So I should really focus on making more money and getting ahead. And I think my car accident was a catalyst in that, realizing that I had no one to depend on, that if I don't make my own money or if I don't get ahead and if something happens to me, I'm going to be in a really horrible situation. So I focused just on upskilling and I jumped around quite a bit. And some of it was working in as a researcher. So I did a lot of research within the tech side because I wanted to move over to tech. So in moving to tech, what was the easiest way? I'm not an engineer. So how do I move that way? And user research is a big way. The other way that some people do it, and I didn't do this, was customer service. So you really understand the user and what they're doing. And then I eventually moved into product management. And product management kind of connects engineers and design into creating a product on a platform. And that product can be like as simple as a thumbs up sign on Facebook, or it can be like literally a whole product where you're rolling out a whole suite of items. And that was the part that I really loved, because you needed to be a critical thinker. You needed to look at data. You needed to look at information. You need to know your users and what they're into. And it was a non-technical role that I could do already with my skill set, like being in comms, understanding things holistically. And and that's where I really kind of grew, I think. At the same time, because I was focusing on my career and upskilling and trying to make more money, I was also just started blogging about finance, because that was always a personal passion of mine. And I, somewhere along the way, which I didn't include in the story, was I came across FIRE and financial independence, retire early, and that whole movement. And so for me, it was the more money I can make, the more I can reduce my expenses, that gap can get bigger and bigger, and the more I can invest and make money from that and essentially retire early.
How did you go about upskilling? Where did you even start with that?
I'm so fortunate that I've had amazing employers. I really have. And everyone who has been my employer has also seen the potential in me. And I think a lot of it comes down to, I would take on new roles or new jobs as they came. I would always like put my hand up and be like, yeah, cool, I'll do it. And I would try to do it as best as possible. And hopefully it was done well. And by taking on these new roles, when something would come up, it would be passed to me. So I would always talk about what my goals were as well in my career. And a lot, and some of that was, well, if I felt like I hit the roof of my career in that space, I would try to think, where could I move into the company, or where can I move to another company where I could also upskill and learn more so that I don't hit that like roof or ceiling.
Yeah. And you became known as like the yes person. Like, yes, Anna will probably do it because she's excited and wants to try more things.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I think a part of that is just like curiosity, wanting to learn new things. And even like, it's not like you love your job all the time and it's okay not to. Even if I wasn't loving my job, one of the things I kept saying to myself is like, I'm learning a new skill set, or how can this be transferable to the other thing? So whenever I was jumping to a new role, I would think about those transferable skills. So, you know, like you look back, it's like, how did I go from arts and events to tech? Well, what are the transferable skills there? Yeah, yeah, exactly. So what's the skill set there? And then similarly, because I was working in product and because I was working in tech and because I was blogging, that's how I ended up working in fintech. So the jump doesn't seem that big, right? Like now you have your passion project and it's evolved over time. And because I was working in fintech, but I already knew so much of that information. Again, sometimes if you're building a tech company, you might have amazing engineers and designers, but they might not know the product, if that makes sense, right? Like they might not know the problem that you're solving. And a lot of the problem that you're solving, you need to talk to your customers, you need to talk to your users and understand that. And I was like that weird bridge of knowing the information in the tech space or the finance space, because that's something I was passionate in. I've read so many books. I was very much involved in the community aspect of reading everything. But then also I had the product and tech background of that. So that's kind of how that all came to be. And then again, having an awesome employer that is really supportive of doing the things that I wanted to do. So being able to do podcasting, being able to, you know, when I was on parental leave, again, like I'm curious. I'm a self-starter. I want to do those things. Like I decided I'd write a book. No one said I should do that. I have no clue.
You just spoke to a few people and you're like, oh, I can actually do this.
Yeah.
Thanks,
yeah.
Evan.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I think that so much, like, again, I'm speaking from a place of privilege and this isn't the case for everyone. There's a lot of people who put out so many different resumes and they can't get a job. But I think some of the big things that worked for me was networking, just getting out there, putting yourself out there, meeting as many people and just chatting with them and talking about how your skill set can apply and be applicable to the situation.
How did you get your job at Pola, if you can talk about that?
Yeah, at the time, I think I was blogging. So I was blogging about my net worth, which I don't talk about anymore. But I was blogging and I think that Nick, who's the CEO, was on my email list or whatnot. I know at the time he was talking to a lot of different content creators who were talking about finance. And it just so happened that we started chatting and he said, hey, you work in tech, you're in product, let's chat. What do you think about our website? And at the time, Perler was bare bones. Like it yeah. literally it just, yeah, it was clunky. It just had auto invest. You didn't know what you did. And I took a look at it and I said, well, I'll get back to you. And I literally had like a multi-page Google Doc of all the things that should be adjusted or thought about, or everything from design to copy to thinking about the user to the user experience and the flow. And that's kind of how we just started chatting. And then I ended up talking to the other co-founders, seeing about how we could work together. They asked me a bunch of stuff and I started contracting on the side. I was on parental leave at this time. So I was supposed to go back to my company and I just started contracting on the side. So I'm very proud of like putting together the first, or I guess that's the Pola. Second version of the auto invest. It's evolved to be. And eventually when Perler was ready and when I was ready, I ended up leaving my last job to move over to Perler, and the rest is kind of this weird serendipitous history. Yeah.
How much do you think having your own blog and personal brand helped? Do you think you would have been able to get into something like your role with Perler without the blog?
No, I don't actually. Yeah. I mean, well, here's the thing. Personal brand is really important. And even though, like, Tash, I'm not like you, right? Like, I don't have a massive social following. I just don't have the time or like, not saying like, it's a lot of work, right? Like, you've put in a lot of work to have a huge following. And sometimes I feel guilty. Like, why didn't I do more of that? But for me, my focus has always been in different areas and those are the compromises. But I do think because I started writing about it, because I started blogging about it, that did get me a foot in the right door. Like, I've always kind of done things like that, right? Like, posted on LinkedIn and so forth.
And you don't need a huge audience to build that network either. Like, I know you've got maybe, is it 4,000 followers on LinkedIn? And you know so many people, like so many of our podcast guests are from your network because you network so well. So you don't need a huge audience to have that nice network of people who know you for what you're passionate about.
Well, and also I think if you connect with other people, if you network with other people, they will know what you're capable of, right? Tash, like I'm sure this happens for you too. Like, they know Tash can do XYZ or Anna can deliver XYZ, and therefore they're willing to put your name forward. In the same way, when I finished my book, I had a couple of people vouch for me and be like, hey, go talk to this media person. I'll connect you. And if you're not already creating those rapports, those opportunities are less and less likely. I remember reading a stat on LinkedIn saying that, like, it was a huge percentage of people get their jobs because of networking. You know, it's a total fluke I got that job in when I first got to Australia, like being at that event. I just ended up meeting someone that I kind of connected with. I put myself out there, right? Yeah. And that's sometimes hard to do if you're like, I'm an extroverted person. I have no problem doing that. So if you're introverted or you're shy, like that can be absolutely challenging.
Do you have a story of putting yourself out there and getting rejected or some kind of failure along the way where it didn't work out how you hoped?
Yeah, for sure. There was a job for a junior product manager. And at the time I was not a product manager. I was still working in research. And I went to this job interview and I prepped as much as possible with my product manager friends and I thought I was prepared, and I absolutely blew the interview. Like, I answered the questions. Like, I was quite personable because that's hopefully like the type of person I am. But I just remember bombing that interview and walking out and be like, that's not going to happen. And I did follow up and asked for feedback because that's just the type of person I am. I'm like, can you please give me feedback? What are the things I can work on? And the guy that I interviewed or who interviewed me said, like, listen, your energy's great. Like, you're obviously very curious. You're just not there yet skill-wise. So I'm happy to mentor you. And he gave me a lot of feedback on terms of things I need to work on and so forth. So again, like, taking that experience, and yeah, I totally bombed that. I felt so silly walking out being like, I just wasted their time. It was the most awkward interview, even though I prepped as much as humanly possible. I learned from that. And in fact, I think like the more interviews you can get, the more preparation you can do, it's going to be better for you in the long run.
Yeah. And asking for feedback is so important, but it's also a really vulnerable thing to do. But yeah, Turning that to a learning experience, and then you've kind of put yourself in a better position in their eyes. They're like, oh yeah, she does want to learn and she is curious and she does want to improve. So I think that's like a great thing to do.
I think that's one of the best things that we can do as employees is just have that mindset of like a growth mindset. Because, you know, in the tech world, often we say it's like fail fast, fail often. And that's also very applicable to life. You know, try a bunch of different things. It might not work. Like, my blog sucked. No one read my blog.
But except Nick. It existed. Except the CEO. Yeah, except Kyla. Yeah. Just say that one person.
Yeah. But it exists, right? And even if you're working on something, someone might see it in the same way that, like, you know, I wrote a book and it's a very niche book for young parents starting their family. But you know what? It only takes a few people that you can hopefully impact. And that's kind of where it goes from there.
Yeah. And employers Google you as well. So if they Google you and see that you're an author of this, even if it is a random book to them, but you're still an author, you've put in the time and the effort and the planning to write and publish a book, which is amazing. You've done a blog, you've done all this other stuff too. Like, it makes you look impressive to an employer because you've done all these things and taken the initiative.
The other thing is though, that some employers don't like that stuff. Like, I'm going to be really honest, right? Like, I've been so fortunate that everyone in my career has been really supportive. And even when I've gone on parental leave, I have had only the most supportive employers. And it is so rare. Like, it also just makes like my journey look so much easier as opposed to other people, because I know there are challenges along the way. And some employers hate seeing that you have side gigs or side projects that you're working on, right? Like, they want to shut that down. But also it's your life and you're growing. So I'm always like about having that growth mentality, doing what feels right to you, being your authentic self, following your passions, because they might evolve into something like, you know, right, Tash? Like, look at you. Like, you've followed this passion of finance and it's totally changed your career trajectory.
Yeah, it's been crazy. The bit on the employers is quite interesting because people do ask me if I'm worried about having ruined my future opportunities by doing this kind of stuff. But I feel like it's given me way more opportunities than I ever would have been offered prior to doing this. Like, I get job offers all the time. I know so many people. My network is so much bigger now. Even my last like real in-person job, I had an interview and then the HR person called me back an hour later and they're like, oh my God, I just Googled you. And then he spent half an hour talking to me about his mortgage. I was like, okay, this is fun. But like stuff like that has been really positive, which has been good.
I found that with the roller derby community too, because for example, you have a derby name, you know, you're playing a full contact sport on roller skates. And at the time it was a bit more scandalous and fun in terms of it was a bit kitschy. And now it's evolved into more of like a serious sport. But what I was going to say is that often people will be like, well, aren't you worried that people are going to Google you and, you know, you have this fake name and all of this stuff? And it's like, well, it has opened the doors for me to meet other people. I was able to coach. I was getting paid to coach. I was getting flown around to go do coaching things. And even though I'm not playing roller derby now and I'm not coaching now, those skills are still transferable, right? Like, I am still teaching and coaching people essentially, right, on this podcast about personal finance. And it's about taking these complex ideas and breaking them down. So often I think about what is it in my past career or in my life that is transferable that can kind of evolve? And I don't know, that's just kind of how that's happened.
Yeah, and a bit of a privilege take, but you want an employer who aligns with your values. Like, you want an employer who's open to those other things as well and lets you pursue those things that you're passionate about. Yeah, it's a bit hard if an employer says, no, you can't do that. Then that's probably not an employer you want to work for. But I understand it's what you have to do sometimes to get to other places.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong. Like, I know I made it sound really breezy, but I've had some like horrible bosses along the way and been stuck and no career growth. You know, like, I've done all that stuff because it was the only way to get by, or I couldn't, right? Like, with the GFC, it was like there was just no other job opportunity at the time. And I was just lucky to have a job. And sometimes you just need to suck those days up and just know that it'll hopefully get better.
Do you have a top tip or final takeaway?
Yeah, I think it would be to have a growth mindset. Like, even now I'm still learning, right? Like, I don't know everything. I'm totally okay to be humbled and told by someone that I'm wrong. I think, like, if you have a growth mindset, like, the world's your oyster. And for a really long time, I think in that first couple roles, I thought this was it. This is what work is like. This is as much as I'm going to get paid. I should be grateful. I should be thankful. And it didn't allow me to have an abundant mindset. It didn't allow me to have a growth mindset. It just allowed me to be content. And sometimes that is the case. Like, sometimes the economy and life, you just have to be grateful for what you have at the time. But that doesn't mean that you can't have a growth mindset and try to explore other avenues.
This is great. Thank you for sharing. I think this is such a great episode. And yeah, I think people will find it very helpful.
Awesome. Thanks, Tash.
Bye.
Thanks so much for joining us. If you found this episode helpful, please rate us 5 stars, write a review, or share with a friend. If you're new to investing, make sure to listen to our first 10 episodes. Follow us at Get Rich Slow Club or Tash at Tash Invest or me at Anna Christina.
This show was brought to you by Natasha Etchman, who is an authorized representative, 1299881 of Guideway Financial Services, AFSL 420367. And Perla, who is an authorized representative, 1281540 of Sanlam Private Wealth, AFSL 337927. Knowledge is power, especially when it comes to investing. So make sure you check out our financial services guides and read the product disclosure statement and target market determination for any investments you're considering. See our show notes for more info.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.